Susan V. Brock of Telluride Inside and Out. I'm speaking with Jerry Douglas, perhaps the best-known dobro player in the world. He is celebrating his 25th year at the Telluride Bluegrass Festival, which is happening June 18th through 21st in Telluride. Hey, Jerry.
Hello, Susan.
Good to talk to you again.
Nice to talk to you.
So, the folklore says you were born in 1956 or thereabouts in Warren, Ohio, that you are the son of native West Virginians who moved to Ohio to work in the steel mines. But your father had another side to him. He played in a band on weekends. Talk about his influence. How old were you when you first joined him?
I started playing mandolin when I was 5 years old, but really not in his band. But he had a band from earliest memories that I have, and a very good band, and they were all natives of West Virginia that had moved up to Ohio to work in the steel mills, and all had families, but, you know, that was their day job, and they couldn't go out and be musicians like they really wanted to be because they had, you know, they had to make all this money for their families to keep it to raise their families. But I started playing in the band, playing dobro, when I was about 10 years old, and then his band would come over to rehearse at the house and learn new songs, and I would get to listen to them and watch them and learn a lot from them, and they were very patient with me, and I learned pretty fast, and was really learning from Flat and Scruggs Records, listening to Josh Graves play the dobro on Flat and Scruggs Records, and playing with a live band. Man, having a built-in band to practice with and learn was just amazing. You couldn't replace that kind of an action. So I started playing in bars with them on weekends when I was about 13. And when I was 16, I went away to play with the Country Gentlemen. That was my first real professional job. But, you know, all my training and experience prior to that was with my dad's band, and through their patience and my perseverance, you know, I got to be pretty good on my instrument fairly fast.
Why the dobro, Jerry? Was it something that was lying around the house? Or did you actually?
No. There was never a dobro line around the house or anything like that. It was just listening to the records. That was the instrument that really grabbed my attention. And I loved Earl Scruggs' banjo playing. You know, when I'd be getting up to go to school, my dad would be going to work, going to the mill at the same time, and we'd listen to the Flat and Scruggs show if weather permitting, if WSM in Nashville was a clear channel radio station. If it was clear enough, if the weather was good enough between us, we could get that radio show live. But if we couldn't, he had a record on. There was always music in the mornings. So that, but the dobro really hit me hard. It was I sang all the time too before I started playing dobro, and I think that took over, the part of my brain that, or anybody's brain that lets you sing. I think that when I started playing dobro, that part of my brain became just dobro dominated, because you're trying to perfect pitch. You know, dobro you play with a slide, so you're always trying to find the correct pitch and be in tune. And singing is the same thing. You know, it's the same part of central part of your brain. So it just did something to me, and I was so interested in it, you know, and it didn't seem like hard work to me. I just really, really enjoyed doing it.
So in a way, you were singing through your dobro.
Absolutely. That's exactly how I put it. It took over that need for me to sing. I transferred that to dobro. It's just such a vocal instrument that it took that part away.
How did the Country Gentlemen find you? Did you find them?
They were, I was playing with my father's band at a festival, and the Country Gentlemen were there at the festival, and we were playing, and I looked out and I saw Charlie Waller in one corner of the audience. I saw Bill Yates in one spot, Doyle Austin in another spot, and Bill Emerson in another spot. They were just separated, and then they all came together, and as soon as we came off stage, they asked me if I would go on the road with them. It was like being scouted as a football player or something.
What's that Rita Hayworth story about sitting on a bench in a soda shop?
Right. It was the same kind of a thing. I mean, I felt like I was scouted, you know, and I couldn't go then. I just, my parents wouldn't let me go. I'm glad they didn't. But they did let me go out on the road with the Country Gentlemen between my junior and senior year of high school. And then as soon as I graduated from high school, I moved to Washington, D.C., where they were based. And that's where I started this long journey.
Yeah. Ricky Skaggs was in that group, right?
Yeah. Ricky Skaggs was in the band at the same time. Ricky was 18. I was 16.
So did you just become like brothers from that early experience?
We did. We really were like brothers and close for about 3 or 4 years, maybe a little bit longer. We were inseparable. We were in different bands together. We went from the Country Gentlemen to J.D. Crow's band with Tony Rice, and then we started our own band called Boone Creek after that. And Ricky went on with Emmylou Harris in 1978, I think it was. And I was kind of lost there for a while. Didn't have my brother around. I moved to Nashville and started working with the Whites, and Ricky was in Nashville then.
Did David Grisman walk into your life around that time?
About the same time, that's right. And I think that was through Tony Rice, you know. Tony was a great ally of mine, and we'd have made some of the best music of my career has been made with Tony Rice. But that was where David Grisman came in, and an interesting part of my career.
David Grisman sort of has a jazzy kind of way with the bluegrass genre, Will.
Mm-hmm.
Almost anything he touches. Was it he who hooked you into jazz?
No, originally Ricky Skaggs and I would listen to Stephan Grappelli and Django Reinhardt.
Okay.
And that is basically where David was coming from, too. And so it was a pretty natural fit for me. I mean, he just got to it sooner than anyone else. You know, he created a band from that sound, from that vibe. And Tony was involved in that. And, you know, through my involvement with Tony, went out and started playing with David. I would go out to record with Tony, and David would be there, and eventually was recording with both of them, and it was just such a natural evolution, you know, to start playing that kind of music, playing acoustic music, but have it such a jazz inflections that it was very easy and very comfortable and new, you know, completely new to the scene. But I was around when David and Tony and Todd Phillips and Bill Amatnick and, you know, and Daryl Anger were starting, and it was the most amazing sound I'd ever heard. It was a revelation. It was something that I'd been hearing in my own mind, but there it was. They were doing it. So it was really great to be around in those times.
And you had probably worked your instrument long enough to feel comfortable with the improvisation piece of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, bluegrass music on the whole is an improvisational music, much like jazz. So it was an easy territory to move into. But it also, you know, involved this different vocabulary, you might say, on the instrument. And it was a place that the instrument had never gone, dobro. I had never really ventured into that place, so it was all brand new, wide open territory, and it was really exciting.
I've never heard anyone describe bluegrass as an improv genre.
Well, you know, in Bill Monroe's day, even then it was. I mean, the whole music was based on country blues and ragtime, and old country string band music. But and it was and it's all you're flying. It's at a fast tempo. Usually bluegrass music can create really intense tempos, and you improvise on a melody, on a basic melody, as jazz is, has a head, and you play the head, and then you leave, but you sort of, all the way through, you're giving your take on what the melody is, or creating a counter melody to that, but still remaining true to the basic melody, but so that you are improvising.
All right. You've convinced me. At what point would you say you were made in the shade? I mean, when did you feel like, okay, my career really has traction now?
I think when I started playing, when Ricky and I got Boone Creek together, after we had played with J.D. Crowe and had gone to Japan, and I felt like I truly was a musician at that point. Up until then, you know, I was just having fun, and I was good at this, you know, but I really wasn't convinced that I shouldn't just stop and go to college. But at that point, I thought, you know, I really have something going on here, and this isn't just something that I'm having fun at for a little while. I'm going to do this. I'm going to turn this into a business as well. And I have to think of it that way from now on. So that's when I really thought, I do have some traction, and I do have something that no one else has, and I'm going to see where it goes. I'm going to follow it to its end.
So you went to the College of Life.
I did, the Rhodes Scholar.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Talk about the first time you played the Telluride Bluegrass Festival. Wasn't Fred Shellman still in charge?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it was fun. It was beautiful. It was the most beautiful place I'd ever been. And I was there with the Whites. I was there with Buck White and Sharon and Cheryl, his daughters, and we were playing. I think Ricky was playing with us, too. I think it was a year where maybe Willie Nelson was there. The festival, you know, it wasn't just a little bluegrass festival anymore. It had grown to the point where it had some headliners, you know, some national headlining acts, but they were closely related to bluegrass, but not strictly bluegrass people.
Well, no longer strictly because of Sam's influence and new
groups. Well, yeah, Sam brought Leon Russell there, and bam, suddenly we're not a bluegrass festival anymore.
Or not, but just a bluegrass festival.
No. It's still a bluegrass festival, and its roots are there just the same as mine are. You know, that festival and I have a lot in common, is that we have a thread running through us that is basically a pretty traditional bluegrass vein, but we're able to go different places and be accepted by the audience and what we do, and Craig is able to bring some acts there that aren't, you know, David Byrne, he's coming there. So,
yep. Yes,
you know, that's not anything to do with bluegrass. But that audience feels a kinship to that kind of music as well. It feels just as close to that as it does to bluegrass. And it's a wide, you know, they have big ears, those people out there. They're willing to accept just about anything that's brought in there because, you know, It was brought in there with them in mind. It wasn't brought there just to attract a crowd. It was brought there to have something to do with the festival and advance the musical interpretation of the festival.
Do you recall the year that Edgar and Bela played Bach?
I don't remember what year it was, but Edgar was new to me. I met Edgar in Nashville, and we just all slammed together and started making this music that felt the same to me as when I heard Grisman and Tony and those guys playing. It was new. It was different. It was even more bluegrass oriented. But suddenly we had this classical bass player who could play fiddle tunes on his bass, and that just blew the doors wide open to a lot of other things. And Mark O'Connor was playing with us, too.
Jerry, was it was you and Bela and Edgar and Mike Teeley, I think.
And who?
Mike from Nickel Creek. Mike Teeley.
Oh, Chris Teeley?
Oh, sorry, Chris. Oh, Lord, forgive me. Yes.
Chris Teeley. No, no. When we first were playing out there, it was Mark O'Connor.
Okay, sorry.
That's who it was. Yeah,
right.
Chris was about 12 years old then.
Yeah.
When we started playing Telluride, as a band, it was just a jam session that we were having, and we all got thrown together, and then we got serious enough to make a record, and we called it the Telluride Sessions.
That's right, you did. Okay.
But it was called Strength in Numbers was the band.
Okay.
But it was just called the Telluride House Band. Telluride All-Stars, that's what we were. Telluride All-Stars.
So Strength in Numbers was an evolution?
It was, yeah.
Basic House Band.
Yeah, we saw that there was enough interest in it that we should make a record. So we wrote all the music on it. It was all original music written by the band, and with each of us writing with the other five people. Sam Bush, did I forget to mention he was in there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sam, Mark, Edgar, Bela, and I. Yeah.
And
it was beautiful stuff, and it's still out there, and it's been spread word of mouth all this time. The record company, we were with a major label, but they didn't know what to do with it. But it's still in print. It survived all this time.
Let's get a little bit promotional since I've got your attention and you've got mine. Your latest solo, I think, album, where you're not being someone's sideman, is Glide. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Talk a little bit about the making of that album.
Well, any record that I make, any solo record that I make, is, you know, I've had a pretty complicated career in being a sideman. You know, with Allison and the band, we're all sidemen. That's an equal band. That's an equal situation where we all bring things to the table. But when I make a solo record, it's sort of, I'm not sure what it's going to be until I pour it out on the table. You know, I keep track of and record little snippets of things, ideas that I have. I record all the time. I'm always dumping things onto tape or onto, you know, a computer somewhere. And when I decide to make a solo record, when it comes down to time to do that, I pour all that out on the table and see how it all fits together. And that's the impetus for all of the songs that I write. A lot of them start out as exercises, warm-up exercises, and just, you know, things that fly through the air and land on me. I just I use them all, and that's how I write my songs. But it's all, you know, it's a great labor of love for me, and I'm really pleased that people like them enough to buy them and all that kind of thing. I'm not a huge capitalist. I don't look at it in that way. I'm not out to make a career out of selling my own solo records. I love playing live. Really, it's just another vehicle to get out there and play in front of people, just to have a new record to play.
Is there a vocal dimension on Glide?
There are a couple vocal interruptions on Glide. One of them is with Rodney Crowell singing "A Long Hard Road," a song that he had written a long time ago that I had played with the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, and they had a huge country hit with the song. But Rodney had never recorded it, so we put it on my record. And Travis Tritt, a country singer, Travis Tritt sang a Paul Brady song that I had enjoyed for a long time and thought it was a good fit. Paul Brady's been to Telluride. He's been out to the festival a couple of times and just absolutely loved it. He's an Irish songwriter and pretty big star in Europe.
Do you think you'll play some of the cuts from Glide?
Oh, yeah. We're going to play cuts from Glide, and I've started digging up old stuff on records I did a long time ago that I've never really played live. So we've got a lot of those in the show now, too. Every time I come to Telluride, I want to bring something new to the table. I don't want to come out there and do the same show that I've done it. I don't want to do the same show every year. I want to bring something new. Otherwise, I don't feel like I should do my own show. So,
fair enough.
And so I want to bring something new to the table. And I feel like I'm doing that this year. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's the same band that I had last year, but we're playing pretty much completely different music, and we have Glide to ride on the back of this time.
Great. Now, you're a family man. You've got kids and everything, but you and your wife, Jill, almost always come to Telluride, just the two of you. Why is that?
We held that one out. We held Telluride out as our festival to go to. That was our treat to ourselves. And, you know, there are other festivals that we've always taken the kids to, Merlefest and things like that, that were a little closer to home. The first year that Jill and I came to Telluride as a couple, when we first got together, we brought Patrick, our one-year-old son, and he got sick. He got an ear infection. So we decided, you know what, we're not going to bring kids here anymore. This is our festival. This is just for us to have fun and not worry about, you know, having to do things for the kids or any other people. We're going to be a little selfish about this, just have this as our own. But you know what, this year we're bringing all of them. We're bringing all four children with us, and they're all grown. Of course, at this point. So, and they enjoy the same music. So they're, you know, it's, in a way, we've been keeping them away from that festival. But we're going to bring them all this time. We're going to drop our rule and bring everybody with us. And I'm looking forward to getting see what they think of, get their impressions of what the festival is.
Great. When John Cowan had his 25th, Craig and Steve gave him a pony. Do you have any idea what they've got up their sleeve while playing?
I have no idea. That's kind of exciting to me to find out what it is. I asked somebody who knew, and they wouldn't tell me. And so it's all going to be a big surprise. And, you know, I don't know, this whole 25th, you know, it's kind of new because there aren't that many people that have been to 25 Tellurides, except for, you know, the New Grass Revival guys, really.
Exactly.
And possibly, you know, Tim O'Brien and the Hot Rise guys.
Yes.
It's the only other band that has survived all these years and has been asked back that many times. And I feel like I'm in a select group of people here, and I don't know exactly how to treat it, but I'm really excited about it. More excited than I should be. I don't know. But I think it's really cool because I really love coming out there. And I did miss a few years just because I didn't think I had anything to bring. And I didn't want to come if I couldn't really, really bring something great. And I really missed it every time the festival was going on and I wasn't there. I was thinking about it anyway.
Yeah.
So I decided to just quit that and go. You know, if I was asked, I went.
Thank you. Every single time you've come, thank you from my heart. We've always enjoyed hearing what you bring to us. This is Susan V. Brock from Telluride Inside and Out, giving you an insider's peek at the Zazz of Telluride. I've been talking to Dobro superstar Jerry Douglas, who is celebrating 25 years with Telluride Bluegrass. See you soon, Jerry.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, Susan.